Deep into the darkness, we all got lost, caught out in the rainstorm, bullets falling fast. Chapter 44, Escaping for Good. The ghost shuddered underneath Kanan's feet as they took off, the ramp hissing closed. The others were talking to each other, filling each other in on what they'd been doing, but it was just noise in his ears. He only had eyes for Ezra, his Padawan's pain and grief flooding along the bond. Pressing his cheek to the top of Ezra's head, he let his eyes flutter shut as he focused. He sent love and soothing calm along their bond, trying to push back the overwhelming emotions. The pain from the stump where Ezra's leg had been was insistent, though, and Kanan found himself focusing on pushing it down to more manageable levels.
I'm here. I'm here. I'm here.
The hum around him changed pitch, letting him know that they had left Atmo. Despite himself, Kanan felt himself start to relax. The further they got from the academy, the closer they were to real doctors. Speaking of which, there was more that he could do for Ezra than just push some of the pain away. Kanan opened his eyes and searched through the babbling group for Zeb. He spotted him quickly, what with how small the cargo bay was. He was hugging a teary Sabine, his massively muscled arms wrapped tight around her. Zeb! The large Lasat looked up, but didn't unwind his arms from Sabine.
Yeah?
Then he saw Ezra's leg and cursed. Kanan smiled mirthlessly.
Where's the med pack? I want to get him stabilized for when we get back to the carrier.
The ghost suddenly shuddered, so hard that he and everyone else staggered. Somewhere in the ship, electronics screamed. Above them, the intership comm crackled.
"Everyone down there, I need someone manning the guns,"
Hera shouted, her voice tight with tension.
"We have Imperials up here."
"Imperials? Here?"
Ezra whimpered, the pain that Kanan had been pushing back welling up as he slipped in control from shock. Kanan stood still, torn between the need to man the guns and the need to tend to his Padawan's needs. A metal hand with only 3 fingers clapped onto his shoulder. Looking over to its owner, Kanan saw Janice looking down at him with soft eyes.
"There's enough of us to take care of things. Focus on treating Ezra."
Right. Right. Kanan was so grateful to the Kalaran for cutting off his worry spiral that he didn't mind being pushed toward the ladder to the cockpit, where the others were already clamoring up.
"Medpack's by the door to the cockpit,"
Zeb said hurriedly from the top, already halfway through the door.
"Keep the kid warm."
Shifting his grip so that he could hold Ezra with only one arm, Kanan nodded and began the climb.
"Thanks, Zeb,"
he said. But the other man was already gone. The others peeled off as he headed towards where Zeb had said the medpack was. Picking it off of the wall, he punched the button to open the doors to the cockpit and set Ezra down in the nearest chair.
"I need guns, not help flying," Hera said, keeping her eyes on the viewport and displays in front of her.
"Not here to help you," Kanan replied, kneeling down in front of his Padawan and clicking the crash belts into place over the kid's chest.
"Ezra's hurt. The others are manning the guns."
He could feel the worry abruptly punch through the tense concentration that had been radiating off of her.
"Ezra's hurt? I'm working on it,"
Kanan replied, flipping open the medpack's lid. You just get us to an actual doctor. He had known that splurging on a real medpack had been a good idea. Picking out a numbing hypospray, he pressed it to Ezra's thigh and triggered the release mechanism. Almost immediately, the pain that had been rattling along their bond began to lessen. Right, that was one thing taken care of. Next, he pulled out the emergency thermal blanket and tucked it around Ezra's shoulders, covering his upper body and his still whole leg. The stump, though, he left uncovered. He needed to look it over. Back in the temple, they had only ever fought with training lightsabers. Set at a lower intensity than a real lightsaber, they only left small, painful burns that rarely penetrated past the first few layers of skin. A full-powered lightsaber, however, capable of cutting through a limb, would burn far more than was immediately obvious. And while Kanan was never formally trained in using the Force for healing, he was sure that the little tricks he knew would at least be able to stop the burn from continuing to cook his Padawan's flesh. Taking the stump in both hands, and carefully keeping the nausea that such an action caused behind his shields, Kanan examined the injury through the Force. He could feel the heat of the burn, radiating upwards like a line of fire, leaving only ash in its wake. He grimaced and began to reach out, cooling the heat. The further it spread, the more the doctors would have to take off when they finally reached them. The ship shook underneath them, making the medpack go skidding away from him. Alarmed, Kanan broke off from what he was doing and looked over his shoulder. Did we... The question he was about to ask died on his tongue as he saw the other ships out there. There were, of course, Imperial ships and their ties, but swooping around like predatory birds, he recognized those ships. Had seen them in the temple hangar, dreamed of flying them himself. He was on his feet and crossing to his usual seat before he realized he was moving. Are those Jedi starfighters? Hera chuckled. Turning his head, he could see her grinning even as she pulled to the side to avoid a volley of laser bolts. They are! The Jedi fleet arrived just a little while ago. Really saved our butts. They're covering us while we finish collecting the last of the transports. Kref. The Jedi fleet. Kanan collapsed into his chair and just stared at the action going on around them. Fighters were dodging between ties, breaking their formations so that resistance fighters could blast them to bits. Larger ships that had to be the carriers of the Jedi fleet sailed through space, surrounding the two carriers that they had come to Drummond Kaas in. Kanan could tell from the various maneuvers that the Imperial Star Destroyers were trying to get in formation to attack the carriers, but the Jedi weren't letting them. As he watched, an old Venator rolled so that its bottom was facing the incoming fire from one of the smaller Imperial ships. "When do we get in contact with the rest of the Jedi fleet?" he asked dazedly. Hera twirled them out of the way of an ambitious tie, letting one of the people at the guns take it out. Just a few hours ago, an Inquisitor managed to get a message out, and it was reported from spies in the Sirtar sector that the Grand Inquisitor's personal fleet was moving. Apparently the rest of the Jedi were at home base by then, and since they were all warmed up already, they volunteered to come. The carrier was coming up now, its blue opening bright even amongst the explosions. Explosions were now rocking them regularly, but from the dashboard, Kanan knew that none of them were from being hit. Ties whipped around them, exploding almost as soon as they turned towards the ship. Then they were sliding into the hangar of the carrier, the sound of explosions now behind them. The Venator shook around them, but the shields held. It was a testament to the clones' training that not a single one looked up from their duties. Shields holding at 60%. Returning fire in 5, 4. General Windu? Mace looked away from the display, showing the positions of all the ships involved, to see a clone dash up to him and Commander Lakes. What is it? The clone straightened and saluted him hurriedly in the hollow perfect way that all the clones decanted after the Second Battle of Kamino did. "We just received a transmission from General Cleave's carrier. They've confirmed that all ships have returned and they're ready to make the jump to hyperspace, but the Grand Inquisitor's interdictor is stopping them." The ship shook from another volley of missiles, making the poor Vaud stumble slightly. Mace reached out and steadied him, ignoring how he looked like he was going to faint from actually being touched by his general. "Inform Cleave that we will clear the way and be ready to jump." "Yes, sir," the clone snapped, ripping off another salute. He then turned and darted away, nearly falling over in his urgency to get back to communications. Commander Lake chuckled. "Enthusiastic, isn't he?" Mace let out a huff of laughter of his own. The battle was close, but they weren't doing as badly as he had feared. General Cleave's tactics had helped soften the Imperial fleet up before they had arrived, which had definitely helped. Then the third person at the monitoring display spoke. "If you wouldn't mind turning back to the display, sir," Knight Ta said, her voice just this side of insubordination. "Perhaps you could plan out how to follow through with that promise?" Mace shot her a warning look anyway, but did as she said. As conservative, reactionary, and flat-out irritating as she could be, the Mickian Knight was a minor genius when it came to tracking positions in the middle of chaotic combat. If he was to follow through on his promise as she said, her tracking would be vital. Looking at the positions, he noted that they were actually in a fairly good arrangement. They had managed to cripple or otherwise destroy a good quarter of the Imperial fleet in their first surprise salvo, and another quarter had been demolished by their guns. In turn, they had managed to prevent losing more than a handful of their smaller freighters. The two main carriers of the raid had been successfully protected, taking no more than one or two glancing blows since the order had arrived. Mace allowed himself to feel a warm curl of pride at that. Nearly 20 years of combat experience, showing themselves magnificently. But things changed quickly in battle. As he watched, two more freighters blinked out on the display, destroyed. "That was the Heart of a Jedi and Heart of the Blade," Ta said. Her voice was tight. "If we slingshot around the planet, we could get out of range of those gravity wells and make the jump." Mace tightened his lips. "You are suggesting that we leave the Resistance ships behind?" "We are taking losses that we cannot afford." Ta was unapologetic, looking up at him with an almost challenging stare. "Losing the children on those carriers is what's unacceptable," Commander Lakes interjected, stone-faced. "Darksiders," Ta countered. Her upper lip curled just a little. Abruptly, Mace felt very tired and very irritated. Disagreements or no, now was not the time for arguments. "Victims, Knight Ta," he said, placing a firm hand on her shoulder. "Along with many of our own people. Keep your eyes on the display, if you please." Ta visibly clenched her jaw, but turned back to her job. Mace let out a sigh through his nose and turned to walk to the main comms unit, Lakes following behind him. Reaching out, he activated it and narrowed them down to the Jedi command frequencies. "Masters, the carriers now have all freighters returned and are ready to make the jump to hyperspace. The gravity wells on the Grand Inquisitor's ships are preventing that, though." The blue, flickering figures of the other council members made various gestures to show understanding.
"My blockade runner can certainly handle most of the smaller ships," Rancisis said, stroking his beard. "But its guns are nowhere near powerful enough to take down the shields surrounding the wells." "None of our ships do," Master T noted, scratching at one of the scars on her cheek thoughtfully. "At least, not if we are to escape in a timely manner. I've had the men running estimates on their shields, and they are most likely still over 50%. "Perhaps we don't have to break those shields, though," Koth said.
Mace looked at the Zabrak with curiosity. The man, never talkative at the best of times, had only gotten quieter in their exile. Looking at him now, Mace found himself struggling to identify the emotions crossing the man's face.
My ship is a hammerhead,
Koth continued quietly. His hands were folded in his sleeves in front of him.
It is designed for ramming other ships out of the way so as to enable others to escape to hyperspace. A good hit will take out at least one of the gravity wells.
It hit Mace then, what that expression on the other master's face was.
It was designed to do so many centuries ago, against very different ships,
Master Kenobi said after a moment of silence. His voice was a gentle warning.
A Star Destroyer is much larger than what they are designed to safely ram. I am aware of that, Master Kenobi,
Koth replied. He was not quite looking at them, but Mace could see the stubborn set of his jaw.
But I have been in contact with Tano on her carrier, and she has given us a preliminary estimate of the number of children that they have retrieved. Combining the two carriers, she believes that they have approximately 300 children currently on board.
A thrill of electricity crackled down Mace's spine. He had barely dared to hope for even 100.
A single council member's life is a bargain for 300 Padawans,
Koth continued, bowing his head.
My loss will be the Order's gain.
Well, there was not much Mace could find to say against that. Apparently, though, Ta could. You cannot be serious, she said from behind Mace. He almost jumped at the sound of her voice, having not heard her come up, but refrained. He shot her a look over his shoulder that she ignored. With all due respect, Master Koth, you are hardly as replaceable as you seem to believe. You are a Jedi Master, a rather rare commodity these days.
Your concerns are reasonable, Knight Ta,
Koth interrupted.
But I have finished my holocron. My knowledge is not going anywhere. And Master or no, I am no longer a young man. The children will be able to learn from others, and they have many more years left in them. Far more than I have left in myself.
But Master... Ta turned her head and shot Mace a beseeching look. Mace smoothed his expression and looked back at her. Creating holocrons had become a policy shortly after they had started their long exile. The loss of so much knowledge along with their temple, and the rapid realization of just how dangerous it was for a Jedi out in the galaxy without a republic, had made preserving what they did have a top priority. Master Koth is correct, Mace said. His knowledge has been preserved, and we need those children to carry on the Order. For a second, her face scrunched up in frustration and anger. And then it was gone, smoothed over like it had never existed. She bowed her head. As you wish, Master. Mace watched for a moment to make sure that she made it back to her seat, before turning back to the others. I accept your plan, Master Koth, he said. We will transmit instructions to the Resistance so that they are ready to leave. May the Force be with you. The others murmured the blessing in reply, and then winked out one by one. Turning to Commander Lakes, the clone soldier nodded, already understanding what Mace wanted. He turned and walked over to communications to pass on the message to the Resistance, as Mace walked to the front viewports of the ship. He would watch his fellow Jedi's sacrifice and remember it, even if no one else did. Behind him, the murmur of voices went on, passing his ears like river water around a rock and leaving him to his own thoughts. Ships zipped across the starfields, dancing between laser blasts and missiles alike. Explosions bloomed silently like flowers as TIEs and starfighters alike were hit, all while the menacing, predatory shape of the Grand Inquisitor's ship floated in space. Its bulbous gravity wells somehow didn't take away from its menace, reminding Mace of bulging muscles on an ack dog. There. It took a second, but Mace spotted Master Koth's hammerhead turning against the flow of the battle. Like a shark, twisting in the water to chase after prey, it turned towards the Grand Inquisitor's Star Destroyer, shedding escape pods all the while. It was almost comical, the difference in size between the two ships. But the sureness of the hammerhead's movements kept it from being funny. Behind him, he heard the commander give the order to tractor in the escape pods, but he kept his eyes on the hammerhead. Smoothly and gracefully, it corrected its course toward the bulge of a gravity generator. Someone on the Star Destroyer's bridge had noticed them now and were firing wildly at the ship, but it was too late. It had gotten too close now to be stopped. Space was silent, but Mace could imagine the noise as the head of the ship first hit the well. An awful screech and thrum as metal was torn and pulverized, the explosion whipping through the empty space like flowers bursting into bloom at the start of summer. More colors than Mace could count filled his vision, glowing and covering the front of the hammerhead, and the Star Destroyer began to list. "Sir," one of the comms officers shouted. "Hyperspace sensors showing that we're a go." "Wait for the carriers to go first," Mace ordered. The statement was unneeded, though. From his viewpoint, he could see the Resistance carriers moving forward eagerly along the channel that had been opened for them. First one, then the other, flattened and shot forward, disappearing into blackness and leaving Mace with a great sense of relief in his chest. "Carriers are gone," Lake said, coming up behind him. "Shall we go now, too?" Mace nodded, looking back over to the Grand Inquisitor's ship. It was tilting badly now, no longer shooting at the other ships. "Make sure that the escape pods from Master Koth's ships are picked up, then go for hyperspace." He turned away from the window now, heading back to communications. He still had a job to do. He would mourn and remember later. The hangar was a madhouse. Cradling Ezra in his arms, Kanan looked around the seething mass of people running around, trying to spot a doctor. He saw several Jedi and soldiers, supporting or also carrying children in their arms, but there didn't seem to be anyone in the white uniform of a medic running around. Reaching out, he stopped a soldier that was jogging past him, holding a young, dark-skinned woman with a reception port for a mechanical arm clamped over her shoulder. "Excuse me," he said. "Make it fast, buddy," the soldier replied, but he stopped anyways and turned to face him. Now that the man wasn't moving, Kanan could see that the girl in his arms was in nearly as bad a shape as Ezra. The reception port had clearly only recently been attached, judging from the blood oozing from it, and the way her eyelids were fluttering, she was going into shock as well. "I've got the same problem as you," Kanan said, tearing his eyes away from the child. He hefted Ezra a little higher in his arms, and saw the way the man's eyes zeroed in on the empty space where his legs should be. "Where's the medbay on this ship?" The man's dark eyes flickered up to him. "Follow me. I'll take you." Kanan nodded and fell behind him, trotting along in the path the other man was clearing through the crowds. He couldn't help scanning the people that they passed, looking for familiar faces. There was a red-haired girl, sitting on a crate and watching her surroundings with a face slack with exhaustion. There was a Miri Allen boy, standing and staring at the floor, swamped by a blanket wrapped around his shoulders. A female Twi'lek, leaning against a woman with a lightsaber at her hip, half of her head consumed by startlingly white bandages. Injuries. Exhaustion. And relief,
peeking through all of that like the first flowers of spring. The feeling wrapped around Kanan like he was walking through a web. It only got more tangled once he and the man ducked into the ship proper. While less of a madhouse, the emotions jumping around the hallways leading to the medbay were no less overwhelming for their intensity. The chatter here was low and controlled, asking for different medications and tools, reporting on heart rates and blood pressure, soothing hurts and explaining pains. Hover beds were pushed against the wall, their sheets crisp and white if a little worn.
"Sir, can you tell me what happened here?"
Kanan snapped out of his stupor to see a yellow Twi'lek looking at him in concern, a hover bed behind her. She looked familiar, like he'd seen her somewhere before. "No, that wasn't important. An Inquisitor found him," he said grimly, laying Ezra down on the bed. Lifting the corner of the blanket he wrapped his Padawan in, he heard the doctor gasp. He pressed his lips together. "Yeah." The doctor squeezed in beside him and lifted her comb to her lips. "Suyo, Vanner, I need you two here. We have a complete amputation of a leg approximately 2 inches above the knee by..." She looked at him, and Kanan nodded in reply to the silent question. "By lightsaber. Patient appears to have been given basic treatment for shock." She began to move away with the bed, Kanan trailing after her. He stroked a few strands from Ezra's forehead, frowning at the chill he felt. Reaching through their bond, he could feel the pain that was still radiating from the stump, not as sharp as before, but a steady, dull ache that went on and on and on.
"I'm sorry,"
he thought.
"I'm so, so sorry."
Absorbed in the bond and his own apologies, he didn't realize where they were going until hands were pressing against his chest, keeping him from going any further. He lifted his head, opening his mouth to snap, only to meet sympathetic eyes.
"I'm sorry, sir," a cyborg said, his replacement eyes glowing slightly even in the hallway's bright lights. "The boy needs surgery to remove the burned flesh, and we just don't have the room for you in there."
"He needs me, though."
The cyborg's lips twitched.
"Yeah, a lot of you Jedi have been saying that," he said. "The answer's still the same, though."
The words, "I'm not a Jedi," were immediately on Kanan's tongue. He wanted to deny it, but hadn't he told himself on his way to save Ezra that he wouldn't deny it anymore? Hadn't he just been calling him his Padawan in his head?
Gritting his teeth, he looked down at the metal floor.
"Fine," he said. "Is there someplace nearby I can wait, then?"
"We set up a room for you, Jedi. I'll have one of the droids lead you there."
One of the droids ended up being a gonk droid that had waddled along so slowly, Kanan wondered if Ezra would be out of surgery by the time he had reached the waiting room. Finally, though, they had made it to a small room that had clearly been previously storing extra equipment rather than people. There were no chairs, and the various Jedi and soldiers, only told apart by the lightsabers dangling from some people's belts, were either leaning against the wall or slumped on the ground, dirty with blood and sweat. Kanan ended up mimicking those on the ground, sitting with his legs crossed and elbows resting on his knees. Closing his eyes, he tried to reach through the Force and check in on Ezra. There was still pain, but less, and the emotions that had felt like they were cutting him were blunted now. Must have gotten him some proper painkillers, he supposed. Someone sat down beside him. Kanan ignored them and tried to get a better read of Ezra. The pain might have been lessened, but it wasn't gone entirely, and any discomfort that he could help with... "Kanan?" Kanan's eyes snapped open.
"Sabine?"
The other kid of the crew was sitting down beside him, her knees drawn to her chest and looking very young. She smiled weakly up at him, her dyed hair looking oddly lank and muted as it stuck to her cheeks.
"I was told that you'd be here by a doctor," she said, her voice unusually soft and meek.
She hesitated. How's Ezra? Kanan sighed and leaned his head against the brushed metal wall.
They've taken him into surgery. They want to get the dead flesh off and have him properly treated for shock.
Out of the corner of his eye, he saw her dig her fingers into her calves.
Hey, hey,
he said softly, putting his arm around her.
None of that. His injuries are not your fault.
This one is, Sabine replied, not looking at him.
His leg's gone because he pushed me out of the way.
Kanan grimaced.
Better a leg than a life, though,
he pointed out.
He pulled her closer. Open to the force as he was right now, her misery was like a long, discordant groan rattling around his head.
Sabine sniffled and rested her head on his shoulder.
It's not just that, though, she said. The Seventh Sister. She ambushed my team and used my voice to lure him down there in the first place.
She stopped and swallowed. Kanan could feel a fine tremor in her shoulders and threw caution to the winds. Wrapping his other arm around her as well, he pulled her into a close hug and ignored the other people in the room.
She was in my head,
Sabine mumbled tearfully into his shoulder.
I couldn't stop her. She saw everything.
Kanan shushed her softly, even as he wished that the Seventh Sister was still alive so he could kill her all over again.
You were never taught how to defend yourself from those sorts of attacks, so you need to stop blaming yourself, you hear me?
He said sternly.
It's more my fault anyways. I do know how to defend myself. I knew that we were going into a place that would have people capable of that, and I left you two to fend for yourselves. If anything, it's my fault that all of this happened.
Sabine's hands were digging into his back. Reaching up, he smoothed his hand over her hair and didn't mention the dampness that was seeping into the collar of his shirt.
Listen, he said softly. I have accepted Ezra as my Padawan.
He was proud of how he only stumbled a little over the word.
I'm going to be training him in a lot of things, including shielding. If you want, you can join us for those lessons, okay? Just don't blame yourself for all of this, okay? It's not your fault.
He rocked her a little, rubbing his thumb over the back of her head. Sabine snuffled into his shoulder.
I'd like that,
she said quietly, her voice cracking just a little.
It's a deal, then, Kanan said.
He hugged her a little closer and stroked the back of her head.
It's okay, he murmured. It's all okay now. I'm here. I'm here. I'm here.